Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, without further ado, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, back from fly fishing, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Yep, I did have a good week fly fishing on the Teton River up there by, out of Driggs, Idaho.
Oh, my.
Neat experience. Beautiful country up there, too. You know that. So,
what are we going to talk about
today? We are going to talk about a guy. Now, I'm going to step out on a limb and say that I'm going to bet not hardly anybody has heard of this guy. His name is Mike Tovey. T-O-V-E-Y.
Never.
Mike Tovey.
Nope.
Okay, so let's talk about him. So Wells Fargo and the company's Express was one of the most important businesses on the Western frontier. The company began as a local mail delivery service during the California Gold Rush in 1852, and a time when the U.S. Post Service was all but non-existent in the mining camps. They really didn't have much. And the other thing that was great is Wells Fargo was safe. And unlike the post office, if you lost something, they made up for it. All the losses were made up if you lost something that was being guarded by Wells Fargo.
Really?
So it,
back in those days?
Yeah. So it grew rapidly throughout the West, connecting the big towns, the small towns, and eventually, of course, became the country's largest express carrier. Now, obviously, the robbers followed the money, and during the late 1850s, stagecoach holdups became very, very common in California because of all the gold, you know. So Wells Fargo began hiring armed guards, and they were later called shotgun messengers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to explain that in a minute.
Okay.
And these guys were to accompany the treasure shipments, and contrary to popular belief, they did not guard stagecoaches. They were there to protect the Wells Fargo strongboxes. They really didn't guard the stagecoach, even though that's what they were on. And the
what about the passengers?
Well, you know, in the course of things, I'm sure they helped protect them,
yeah.
But really, they're job was to guard the strong boxes,
really?
The money.
Huh.
Now, the title shotgun messenger did not come into popular use until the 1870s, and the term riding shotgun and shotgun rider was actually invented by 20th century novelists and actually was unknown in the Old West. So the real term was shotgun messenger. So riding shotgun really was not the term that was used.
Yeah.
Now, by the mid-1870s, the company had 35 shotgun messengers. That number grew to 110 in the 1880s and then 200 by 1885. By 1918, the company employed 3,000 shotgun guards. Now, at this time, they were mostly on trains,
mm-hmm.
on the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And every Wells Fargo rail car had at least one armed messenger and a lot of time a helper. So a lot of times they didn't even have two guys. Now, of these guards, Wells Fargo Chief Detective James B. Hume explained, quote, "In all my experience, there has never been an occasion when a regular shotgun messenger showed the white feather, no matter what the odds against him or the promise of danger might be. They are the kind of men you can depend on if you get in a fix, with the certainty that they will pull you through or stay by you to the last."
White feather.
So the term, I've never heard that term.
I've never heard that.
Showed the white feather.
Really?
So I thought that was an interesting...
I've heard wave the white flag, but
yeah,
never
the white feather. Yeah. So the shotgun messengers who rode for Wells Fargo in the Wild West, they were expected to risk their lives to protect the company's treasure boxes. I don't know how much they got paid, but it probably wasn't enough. Their work was dangerous, and between 1855 and 1915, at least 53 of these Wells Fargo expressmen, most of them the messengers, died in the line of duty.
No
53
kidding.
Of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, and the statistics go on. It says 19 were slain by outlaws or bandits. 4 were accidentally shot. 4 more died in shipwrecks and steamboat explosions. Now, you don't think of those guys being on boats, really, do you?
I mean, a ship or a steamboat.
But,
yeah.
You know, Wells Fargo obviously had
now,
them
on did
there.
They, their job, did they have to, when they were on these boats and trains, stay right in the car and or on the boat right next to the...
Well, I'm just going to assume they did.
Okay.
Because they, I mean, obviously that was their job.
Yeah.
So some of them perished in train wrecks, you know. I mean, trains would crash. But few of them took as many risks as a guy by the name of Mike Tovey. Okay. Now, born in Canada in 1842, Tovey immigrated with his family to the American Midwest when he was 6 years old. During the Civil War, his twin brother Peter enlisted in the Union Army, while Mike drifted west and became a pony rider for Ben Holliday's Overland Mail and Express Company. Now, this was dangerous work, but it brought him to the attention of Wells Fargo. So in 1871, he signed on as a shotgun messenger on this really dangerous bandit-infested stage road from the Union Pacific Railhead at Corinne, Utah. You know where that is, Zeb?
Yeah, I've been there many times.
Yeah, not very far from us, just to the east and south there.
South of Tremont.
Yeah. And from there to Helena, Montana.
Woo!
So that was kind of his route, I guess, if you want to call it.
Now, do you know where the route went?
Not exactly. I'm assuming from Corinne, it had to go up through Pocatello, Idaho Falls, up into Montana. Wouldn't you think that
would
probably be the route? So, but Mike Tovey quickly exhibited a pretty brave, fearless guy. He was a big guy. He stood more than 6 feet tall, 200 pounds, and as one of his stage driver's friends recalled, quote, "Brave men don't talk much, and Tovey would rather sit and tell you a funny story than blow about himself."
Did they go back to? No, they weren't on stages on that route. They were on private horseback, right?
Well, no, this was, I believe, a stage line.
So they ran from Corinne up
to Montana.
I see, on a stage.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I think most of it was staged.
I see.
But then gradually moved into be trains. Now, in 1875, Wells Fargo officials sent Tovey to Nevada to guard the company's express boxes on the stage routes from Virginia City to Pioche and between Carson City, Nevada, and the rowdy town of Bodie, California.
Oh,
now, these were some pretty lawless areas at that time.
Yeah, really.
But anyway, Mike was on that route on September 4th, 1880, when he found himself walking in front of his stage at night. In the blackness, his lantern lit up the outlines of footprints in the middle of this dusty stage road. He'd stopped, okay? So he's out in front of the stage, and he sees footprints. Okay.
Why were they out in the dark where they couldn't see with the stage?
Well,
anyway?
they still had the lanterns on the stagecoach.
I see.
And they went night and day.
I see.
Now, 3 hours earlier, a coach had been held up on the same highway, and Tovey suspected that the bandits might be hanging around waiting somewhere ahead of him. So he walked back to the stagecoach. He climbed into the driver's seat, rested his sawed-off shotgun across his knees. If the outlaws wanted to fight, he was ready for them. So now it's 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 a.m. This heavy stagecoach rumbled into a place called Sweetwater Summit. It's kind of a high spot, 6,800 feet high in Nevada's Sweetwater Mountains. And this is about 40 miles north of Bodie. Now, once again, the alert Wells Fargo man spotted footprints in the light of the coach's headlamps. So he got down with his lantern to inspect them. Then he got back on. He sat next to the driver. And there was a stage line agent by the name of Billings next to them. So now you got the driver, Tovey, and Billings. Okay, there had been so many holdups on the highway between Bodie and Carson City that a second Wells Fargo shotgun messenger, a guy by the name of Tom Woodruff, rode inside with the passengers. So they've got a lot of help right here.
Firepower.
Yeah. Yeah. So the stage continued a short distance when Tovey again saw the footprints. He climbed down, walked forward. He was inspecting the tracks. As the stage followed slowly behind him, suddenly a voice rang out from the blackness, from the dark. Quote, "You son of a gun."
I'll bet that's what it was.
"You son of a gun. You thought you'd sneak up on us, did you?" Yeah, this is a family show, Zeb. You know that. So, Mike.
Well, you're always relating to the honesty and integrity of the Old West.
That's right. I'm sure they never swore. Mike Tovey had no way of knowing that the voice belonged to a guy named William Jones, an ex-convict. He and his partner, Milt Sharp. Now, remember this Milt Sharp. He comes into play later. And they'd been on a terrific spree of stage robbery for the past 4 months. They'd held up 7 stagecoaches in California and Nevada.
Holy cow.
So they were on a run, and 2 of them in the last few days. So these 2 guys, Jones and Sharp, met the winter before on a sheep ranch in the Sierra Nevada foothills near Placer County, California. And Sharp, who was born in Missouri in 1846, had led an honest life. He was doing okay. But when he came west in 1866 and was working as a miner in California and Nevada, he was a gentleman who did not smoke or drink. But Sharp had lost all his earnings, all his money gambling in the mining stocks. So Jones convinced him they could make a pretty good living by robbing stages. So Sharp and Jones joined company. Mm. Now, we're back to the robbery, okay? So Tubby, hearing Jones shout, he pretended to be afraid. He said, "Don't shoot." He says, "I'll go back and get the box." And Jones said, and I'm going to quote this, "Go back, you whelp, and if you make a move, we'll murder every mother's son of you." That's the way they talked.
Uh-huh.
Now, Jones, who then raised his rifle and fired twice. Now, the first bullet went right past Tubby, struck one of the lead horses in the head, killing the animal instantly.
That might not have been a very good
shot. So now
shot.
You've got a dead horse laying there.
And you need to pull the stage.
Yeah. Now the second shot passed between the driver and Billings. Tovey dove for cover under the stagecoach, and then he whispered to Billings, he said, "Hand me down that shotgun."
Okay.
So Billings tossed him the shotgun, jumped down from the box. So here we have Tovey and Billings. Now the guy that's inside the stage, Woodruff, they took cover behind the stage. At that, Jones yelled, the robber, Jones yelled, quote, if you fellows fire a gun, we will murder every son of a gun of you."
Yep, there you go again with honest verbiage.
Yes. Now, so Tovey says, "Nobody's firing any guns," but he cocked the hammer on his shotgun. And he said, "What's the matter with you? If you want anything, come along." Well, so Jones then stepped forward into the light of the headlamps. Now, remember, it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Tubby called out in a low voice to the driver. He says, "Throw down the box quick and let's get out of this." So he's still trying to egg Jones to come in, thinking that these guys are afraid of him. Well, at the same time, Tubby, he crouched, rested the barrel of his shotgun on top of the rear wheel. Just as Jones passed the body of the fallen horse that was dead, Tubby fired one barrel. The heavy load of buckshot tore into Jones's face and neck, killing him instantly. Milt Sharp, the other outlaw.
Oh, yeah, I wondered what happened to him.
Okay, here he is. He's armed with a six-shooter. He opened fire, and Tubby staggered as a bullet tore into his right arm. It shattered the bone below the elbow. He dropped his shotgun. Now, this is a tough guy. Drew his six-gun with his left hand and started shooting back. Okay, now by this time, Billings and Woodruff, the other two guys, they get their guns into play, and they are sending a volley of shots towards Sharp. Well, they saw him stagger and thought that they got him, and they chased him, but he got away in the dark. So at this point, Tubby, he's bleeding pretty bad. I mean, he got shot in the arm and had probably hit an artery or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
So Woodruff and Billings, they carried him to a house a short distance down the road. And while the unarmed driver kind of tried to calm his team, and he unhitched the dead horse because obviously he wasn't going to be any help.
Well, now there's an understatement.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, he heard a voice say, "Throw down the box." So here's Sharp. Shows up again.
Oh, he turned around.
He
and came
back. He returned to finish the robbery.
Oh.
So the driver tossed down the Wells Fargo box, and Sharp chopped it open with a hatchet, took out $750 in cash. So the bandit, Sharp, he didn't know. He couldn't see Jones's body because it lay under the team of the horses. And he asked which way his partner had gone. He didn't know.
Oh, he didn't know he was dead.
Uh-uh. So the driver, fearing for his life, said he didn't know. So Sharp, his gun in one hand and his loot in the other, he took off into the darkness, and he kept calling out for Jones. He said, "Partner, where are you?"
Oh, the driver could hear him yelling?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but he still didn't know that at that point that his partner was dead.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Tubby was loaded into a wagon for a 60-mile trip to Carson City. Now, this has got to be painful, right? He's been shot in the arm. He was treated, and soon he was up and about, his arm heavily bandaged. Meanwhile, Wells Fargo detectives searched Jones's body, the outlaw, and found a bank book in his pockets with his name and a San Francisco address.
Hmm. Okay?
The plot thickens. Police detectives staked out the boarding house where they soon captured Milt Sharp.
He went back.
He was sentenced to 20 years in the Nevada State Prison, and Mike Tovey's action in the holdup had been a sign of Wells Fargo's reputation for safety and security on the frontier.
Wow.
And we're not done.
Oh, okay.
So, over the years, Tovey was dispatched to wherever Wells Fargo needed a good, experienced messenger. I mean, he went to
use... Did he ever regain the use of his arm?
You know, I don't... I don't think he really ever totally did. It doesn't really tell me that. But he recovered enough, and I don't know. But he went into Utah, Montana, Arizona, and finally back to Nevada. Now, in 1884, at Hawthorne, Nevada, he was shot and wounded by a guy by the name of Bill Withrow. He was a gunfighter and actually a former Wells Fargo messenger whom Tovey had accused of helping in a stage holdup. So they weren't friends. Well, in 1887, Mike Tovey was ordered to California, where he rode the stage routes of Amador and Calaveras counties in the Sierra Nevada foothills. 2 years later, Milt Sharp escaped the Nevada State Prison.
Oh, Milt's back.
He's back in the picture. Following his escape, Wells Fargo officials received a letter supposedly written by Sharp warning them that they had better retire Tovey or he would be killed. Kind of a warning. Well, later Tovey received... Later, Tovey actually received a letter, again signed by Sharp, warning him to leave California or, quote, take the same medicine dealt out to poor Jones, the veteran messenger. Tovey ignored the threats.
I see.
He didn't think this was ever going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Then, at 7 o'clock on the morning of April 30th, 1892, Tovey boarded the stage in San Andreas, bound for a place called Sheep Ranch in the mountains, 16 miles to the east. The Wells Fargo box held a mine payroll of $4,000 in gold coin.
Mm-hmm.
The coach was a canvas topped, and they called it, quote, a mud wagon. So I've never quite heard that term. So what they say, it's like a big buggy with three seats. So I'm assuming it's kind of like a covered wagon,
kind.
Yeah. So the front seat held Tovey and the driver, who was actually a 17-year-old boy by the name of Reggio. A 17-year-old driver, pretty young. The next seat was occupied by Johanna, a young girl named age 15, and her sister Louisa, age 14, and the rear seat held two more female passengers. So we got Tovey and Raggio in the front, then we got the two sisters, and then we got two female passengers.
Not much support.
No, and I'm assuming this is kind of like it's out in the open, maybe not even covered at all. Well, as the coach reached a place called Willow Creek, a masked bandit came out from behind a big boulder above the stage road. Without a warning, he fired a single blast from his shotgun. Two box shot struck the driver, Raggio, in the right shoulder, and two more in his chest, piercing his right lung. He turned in his seat, and as blood poured from his mouth, he gasped, "They've killed me, Tovey. Look out for the horses." Well, at the same time, another buckshot tore into Mike's right arm, and several... So here's right arm got hit again.
Wow.
Another struck Johanna, the young girl, and it killed her. Well, a huge manhunt failed to capture the killer, and Tovey and Reggio actually recovered from their wounds.
Oh, the boy didn't die.
No, he didn't die. The 17-year-old. So in May of 1893, Mike received another letter signed Sharp saying that, quote, he had better leave Wells Fargo service and get out of the state, otherwise he would have to be killed. A few weeks later, on the afternoon of June 15, 1893, he boarded the stage bound for Jackson. At the reins of the six-horse team was Tovey's good friend, Clint Radcliffe, a veteran driver. Inside the coach were four passengers, including two women, a boy, and a fifth rode on top. It was 5:30 when the stage reached a kind of a lonely spot on this grade, 5 miles west of Jackson. Several of the passengers heard a sudden shout for the stage to stop. Radcliffe made out nothing. He didn't hear this. And a split second later, gunfire shattered the evening stillness. A lone bandit stood behind a 3-foot-high rock on the right side of the road, working with the lever of his .44 Winchester. His first bullet struck Mike Tovey in the right side, fracturing one rib and rupturing his aorta. The Wells Fargo man started to fall from the stage, and Radcliffe yanked him upright, held him on, By the time Radcliffe managed to stop the coach, Mike Tovey was dead.
Oh, my goodness.
After having been hit that many times.
Wow.
Now, Milt Sharp. Let's get back to him.
Yeah, we only got a minute.
I know. That's what I need. Milt Sharp was captured in Red Bluff in Northern California 3 months later, and he actually managed to prove that he had led an honest life since his escape, and he had alibis from his employers showing that he could not have been at the murder of Tovey. And they actually found that there was an ex-convict named William Evans. He was the guy that actually shot and killed Mike Tovey. So he was laid to rest in the cemetery, and the marker said, quote, he was shot and instantly killed by a robber who attempted to hold up the stage on which he was traveling as guard, erected as a tribute of respect by his employers. So that was on his headstone, and he remains one of the most famous of the men who rode for Wells Fargo. Now,
Mike
wouldn't that
Tovey
be a good movie, Sam?
Oh, man. Yeah, I really enjoyed that story.
Tovey,
Mike Tovey, hero of Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.